Once again, if your primary language is not English and you'd like more than 2.5 hours, you may take more, within reason. Secondly, there will be 9 questions in each list. 9 in each list. Thirdly, all 3 lists add up to 92 points each. There will be 9 questions on each list. They'll add up to 92 points. And fourthly, the following questions will appear on all 3 lists. Number 1, number 4, number 10, and number 15. Now, I'll say a word about 15 in a moment. 1, 4, 10, and 15 will appear on all 3 lists, so you cannot escape them. The following will appear on 2 lists. Number 3, number 8, number 12, and number 13. 3, 8, 12, 13 will appear on 2 of the 3 lists. All the rest will appear on only 1 list. So 2, 5, 6, 7, 9, 11, 14, they'll all appear on only 1 list. Now, number 15. You will see the critical interaction passages at the time of the examination, as though you were reading something for the first time. Okay? You'll see those at the time of the examination, not before. Pardon?
Theological writings, not passages of Scripture?
Correct, theological writings. They may even be philosophical, but they'll certainly be theological. And you notice that you're to make a total of 6 evaluations, 1 or 2 positive and 4 or 5 negative. There will be things in the passage or the passage you treat, and you'll have a selection of 2 or more passages. I'm not sure how many yet, but you'll have a selection. And you'll look at that selection, and there will be some things in that selection with which you will take issue. That's the negative evaluations. But there will be some things, or, well, at least one, that you should be able to positively evaluate. Now, admittedly, if it's a very liberal writing, you might have a tough time finding something positive to evaluate. But as someone said, when the teacher said something about Satan, and the student said, "You certainly can't say anything good about Satan." And the teacher said, "Well, he's very industrious. He's a hard worker." So no doubt you'll find something that you can appreciate positively. Andy, and then Brian, and then David, and then Gloria.
On that same note, my father, who is 87, has said everyone has a useful purpose in life, even if it's only to serve as a horrible example to others.
Very good. Brian.
When you said about standpoint of evangelical theology, is it opposite concept of the liberal theology or anything else?
Well, you're standing within the context of evangelical theology, and you're critiquing, say, a liberal piece of writing from that standpoint. You're not putting yourself in the shoes of the liberal standpoint. You're in the shoes of the evangelical point of view. And obviously the critical passages will be stuff relating to what we're doing in this course. Say something maybe on Scripture. Maybe something on the Trinity. I'm not sure about that yet, but maybe something on the Trinity. But their passages will be related to the things that we've been doing. David.
Two quickies. Is it over the Bible? Is it an open Bible test?
It says Bibles will be permitted.
Oh, that's right. Second question. Can we give you a self-addressed envelope to get the exam mail back to us? Because I won't be
able to. Sure. Yeah, that'd be fine. Yes, that's good, because some people leave after the exam and don't come back for the rest of the summer or whatever. That's good. Yeah, if you wish to do that, make sure it has enough postage for the weight of your exam. Gloria.
The question 15, is that going to be at least the rest of comprehensive knowledge of the whole bulk of this course, or is there
some subject? That can be anything in the course.
I didn't hear the question.
The question was in question 15, will the material addressed be taken primarily from the second half of the quarter? No, from anything is game in the whole quarter. Do you notice there are a couple taken from the first half as far as the first few questions? Other questions, comments? Brian.
Can I ask you about quiz?
Quiz.
Did you say that we can optionally take number 5, quiz number 5, or...
Yeah, if you wish to take quiz 5, or the one that will be given on July 3rd, if you want to take either one of those, you're free to do so. Just let me know. Then what I'll do is, let's see, I guess I'll put it in an envelope with your name on it, put it up in Joanna Hawes's desk drawer, the right-hand top desk drawer. Have your name, Systematic Theology 1, class notes, quiz number, and it'll give the number. Yes, Bianca. Well, if you only take 8, it'll be 8 out of 8. If you take 9, 9 out of 9. So in some cases, if you do well in an extra quiz, that could help your average a little. Not a great amount, but a little. A couple people have asked, are you going to drop one of the quiz grades? No. That's one of the few questions I can answer that quickly. No. Minka. Yesterday. David.
Is it possible to add one of our sample quizzes?
No.
Instead of number 5.
No. Again, a short answer. That doesn't happen often. Any other question on the final exam? I know you'll be asking questions as we go along. And that's okay. Make sure you don't ask any questions after the last day of classes, okay? Try to think of all the questions by the last day of class for this course. Okay, page 181. For a long time, I've had a special interest in the question, is there time with God? Now, that can be phrased in different ways, like, does God have any time for me? Or things of that nature. And the whole issue has a long history, going all the way back to the ancient Greeks. It even goes back farther than that in some cultures. I have a work here edited by J.T. Fraser entitled The Voices of Time. This is published by George Brasilier. And let me just excerpt quickly and just mention a couple of things. There's an article entitled Time in Christian Thought by J.L. Russell, S.J. And he has a couple of statements I'd like to quote. He says, from its earliest days, Christianity began to be influenced by another view of time. That is, he's dealt with the Old Testament concept of time and the New Testament concept of time. He says, from its earliest days, Christianity began to be influenced by another view of time which derived from Greek philosophy. This originated with Plato and was developed or modified in various ways by his successors, Aristotle, the Stoics, and the Neoplatonists. Plato took as his starting point the eternity of God. God is eternal, not in the loose sense of existing for an infinite time, but in the strict sense of transcending time altogether. There is no change and succession, and therefore no before and after in God. He has his full and complete being in an eternal now. And then, for the Greeks, God was the eternal being beyond time and space, beyond all change and succession. I have an interesting book entitled Philosophers Speak of God. It's edited by Charles Hartshorne and William L. Rees. Hartshorne, you may remember, is connected with process theology. And very interesting. It's somewhat technical in the philosophical dimension of it, but it has a lot of interesting stuff about the whole concept of time and eternity in relationship to God. Thomas Aquinas, as you know, is the doctor of the Roman Catholic Church. And in his Summa Contra Gentiles, he has a section on God's eternity. In Book 1, Chapter 15, he says, he entitles it, That God is Eternal. He says, from what we have said, it's further apparent that God is eternal. He is eternal, lacking all beginning or end. Those things alone are measured by time that are moved. For time, as is made clear in Physics 4, that's Aristotle, his work on entitled Physics, is the number of motion. Time is the number of motion. But God, as has been proved, is absolutely without motion. He's the unmoved mover, in Plato and Aristotle's terms. And is consequently not measured by time. There is therefore no before and after in him. He does not have being after non-being, nor non-being after being, nor can any succession be found in his being. None of these characteristics can be understood without time. God, therefore, is without beginning and end, having his whole being at once. In this consists the nature of eternity. And then in chapter 16, which is entitled, that there is no passive potency in God. If God is eternal, of necessity, there is no potency in him. The being whose substance has an admixture of potency is liable not to be by as much as it has potency. For that which can be, can not be. But God, being everlasting in his substance, cannot not be. In God, therefore, there is no potency to being. God has no admixture of potency, but is pure act. Pure act. Actus purus. Pure act. Now that's Aristotle. That's plain, bald Aristotle. Well, I don't know how much hair. But anyway, it's Aristotle, simply. Now there are two basic concepts in time which we need to get a handle on before we launch into a discussion. One is duration. The other is sequence. Duration, sequence. When we ask, is there time with God, we can ask it in terms of duration, or sequence, or both. Aristotle denies both. Aquinas denies both. Curiously, a number of theologians followed Aristotle through Aquinas, and theologian after theologian after theologian, including those during the time of the Reformation, and even those great theologians of the 19th century, simply took over the idea of God's timelessness and incorporated it throughout their work. The concept of timelessness crops up at various places in theology. So it's very important. Now, you read the material. You read the quotation from Plato's Timaeus. You notice the scriptures that are quoted to support God's alleged timelessness. Isaiah 57:15, he lives forever. God lives forever. Psalm 90, verse 4, 1,000 years are like yesterday. Lies a watch in the night. But the main verse is 2 Peter 3:8. With the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day. Now that scripture is supposed to prove for many that God is timeless. I would suggest it's a pretty slender database on which to build such a big concept. And to let that big concept permeate all of theology. I've offered here various views of God's relationship to time, mostly as a matrix into which to plug our thinking, seven views in particular. Let me scout those just briefly so you have a clear idea. In the first one, simply taking Inki. Pardon?
Can I go out 5 minutes and come back?
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
If ever you need to excuse yourself, do so quietly. Okay? Do so, I mean, just slip out. I have no objection to that. If you stay out the rest of the class, well, I may put something in the record book, but otherwise. The first view is that time is non-existent for God. It doesn't exist for him. It's meaningless to him. There's no concept of duration. There's no concept of sequence. There's no before. There's no after. Everything is now. you notice I've quoted Herman Boving picks it up. A.A. Hodge picks it up. Millard Erickson picks it up. They all pick it up. The concept of God's alleged timelessness. Where does it come from? It comes from Greek philosophy. I might say pagan Greek philosophy. And various illustrations are given. For example, the illustration is given of let's put it in a more modern frame. Let's take the Goodyear blimp. And the Goodyear blimp is at the Rose Bowl parade. And the blimp is able to see the whole parade, the whole thing from start to finish. And they're able, if they zoom in, to see the movement of the various bands and floats and the various equestrian units and so on and so forth, whatever's included in the parade, and the cars and so on. And they're able to see that moving along. I forget what avenue. Does it move on? Does it move on Pasadena Avenue? Anyway. The blimp is able to see the whole parade at a glimpse. One glance. Just look, and with peripheral vision, you can see the whole parade if you're high enough. Well, it's suggested that that's an illustration of God's timelessness. He sees the whole thing, but at one glance. Now, if you happen to be standing down at the curb or sitting on the curb, or if you have a lawn chair or something, and you don't get crushed by the people, and you're standing there, it takes time for the parade to go by. It takes time. I mean, it may be 3 hours. And you're sitting there or standing there and watching the different units go by. Now, it's curious because from up in the blimp, you see the whole thing at one moment. It doesn't take time to see the whole thing. Now, of course, if you reflect a little bit about the analogy, if you happen to fix a point down on the ground, say a special reviewing stand, if you happen to pick a point, you could say even from the blimp that the parade is beginning to pass that reviewing point. Now a quarter of it is past it. Now a half of it is past it. And so there's even time in the blimp as you're viewing the parade passing that point. So you haven't escaped time altogether. You can see the whole thing at one glance, but that doesn't mean it doesn't take the same amount of time for that whole thing to pass a point on the ground as it takes for you who are standing on the ground watching it go by. It takes exactly the same amount of time. So the analogy has severe limitations, admittedly. So, well, someone said, well, okay. At least when you see the whole thing at one glance, then we're talking about knowledge. Not so much time per se, but about knowledge. God knows the end from the beginning. He knows the whole thing in one glance. But see, that doesn't really answer the question, is God at the beginning, or is he at the end, or is he not related at all to the time, if you can talk of a universal time. The time it takes for that parade to move past a point. Now, all kinds of interesting things have been happening in the last century about time. We're all bound by time, of course. We're very much bound by time. My children, my three daughters, they're not children, my three daughters say, "You were born during the Depression? Wow." They look at me as though I were roughly code contemporaneous with Moses or something like that. Lots of things have happened during the last 100 years, amazing things. And lots of things have been happening with time. Some of you may have read H.G. Wells' book, The Time Machine. Fascinating book. It was made into a film. It's an old film now. Occasionally they show it on television. It's called The Time Machine. And in it, the inventor, the hero of our story, the inventor has four guests in, friends of his. He's called them there to witness something, a little experiment. He has built a time machine. Now, he's very much into time because there are clocks all over the house and they all keep perfect time. I mean, they all cuckoo or strike at the same time. And the guests all check their watches, you know, against as these clocks start going. He's built a time machine, and he's built a little model of it. A big one, which is in his laboratory, they don't know about it yet. And a little one. And he's going to conduct this experiment with the little one. So when he first brings out this beautiful case, one of the friends says, "Oh, you've made a timepiece. That's what this nation needs." This is England. "Needs a good timepiece for our armed services." This was just before the turn of the century. In other words, just before 1900. "Needs a good timepiece." He says, "It isn't a timepiece." So he opens up this little box. He takes out this little machine and he puts it on the table. Now, he asks them to watch very carefully. Now, before he does the experiment, he explains just a little bit about time. He says, "You've all heard of three dimensions." And one of the friends says, "Well, what do you mean?" And so one of the other friends explains, "You can move forward or backward. You can move from side to side. You can move up or down. Three dimensions." The inventor says, "Most of us, although we're involved so much in time, don't think of time as a fourth dimension." And one of the friends says, "Well, that's just fiction, you know, that's just theory, speculation." "Oh," he said, "is it?" The inventor says, "Is it?" He says, "Everything that we do in life as we move in space also involves time. The four dimensions are woven together. So if you move in space, you move in time." Very interesting. He says, I'm going to start this machine. Now, this experiment can only be done once. There's a little handle. If I push it forward, this machine will go into future time. If I pull the handle back, it will go into past time. Now, for those of you who are into Back to the Future, this is all old stuff. But anyway, if I push this lever forward, this machine is going to be irretrievably lost. It will go into the future. There's nobody on this little machine to pull the handle back to come back into the present. So he says the experiment can only be done once. So he reaches into one of his friend's pockets, pulls out a cigar, breaks it so it's sort of like a figure, sits it in the seat in this little time machine. And he says, "Now watch carefully." He says, in fact, he has one of his friends push the lever forward. Now, before he does this, he says, now look carefully, look under the table. He says, look around. He says, there are no strings attached to this. He says, this is not a magic trick. All right. So the man pushes the lever forward, and it starts going, and a wheel in back, around a big wheel, starts turning and turning very quickly. And then the table starts to vibrate, and the chandeliers vibrate. And the thing goes, and it disappears. And they're looking, and his one friend says, "Where is it?" He says, "What did you do?" You know, thinking there's a trap door. "What did you do?" He says, "That's a good trick." No, he says, "It's not a trick." He says, "The machine is now in the future." He says, "What do you mean it's now in the future?" He says, "It was right there." He says, "It's still there. It's still there in that space. It hasn't moved in space. It's moved in time." Now that's a hard concept for these friends to capture, to grasp. It hasn't moved. He says, "Why can't I feel it if it's still there in space? Why can't I contact it?" He says, "Because time changes space." He says, 100 years from now, this building may not be standing. For all we know, this could be a little park 100 years from now. This house may be demolished. Time changes space. The machine hasn't moved. It's in the same locus, the same place that it was. But now it's in the future. It's moved in time. This is hard for his friends to grasp. They still think, most of them, that this is pure theory. Yet they did see it disappear. Later, of course, he goes into the laboratory after nobody believes him. He writes a hurried note telling him he'll see them in 2 weeks for dinner. And then he goes into the laboratory, locks the door, and starts the time machine, the big one. He gets into the seat himself and starts a series of adventures as he moves into the future. Fascinating story. Fascinating story. Wish I could have brought the video and we could have watched part of it. That would have been fun. Time and space are woven together. You can stand still in space but move in time if you just stay there long enough. In an hour from now, this room may be empty. Of people, I mean. Time changes space. Now, it's more profound than that. That's simple stuff. Can time be changed in direction or in its speed? Can the sequence be changed? Einstein suggested a thought experiment, which later was done, and he was proven to be correct. The experiment was this. When there are bodies in space, massive bodies, the question was, do these bodies curve the space that is near them, or the space in which they're located? If they curve the space around them, then theoretically, photons of light coming from a distant source of radiation, as that light approaches that massive body, theoretically, the light would be curved as it goes around the body and past it, and then comes to our eye. And it would look displaced. It would look displaced from the way it looks when you're not looking at it, that is, as the light comes near that body. If you could look at it at another time when the body's over here and the light's coming to you, and then when the body's here and the light's coming to you, he said the light would be displaced by the curvature of space. Now that was a very esoteric concept when it was first broached, that space can be curved by mass. Yet later, it was proven to be so. Light from a celestial body was actually displaced by a small amount when it came near a particular body. One implication of relativity, and a curious implication, is that as you approach the speed of light, if you could get going that fast, as you approach the speed of light, something happens to space. Something happens to mass. So that as you get closer and closer to the speed of light, bodies become more massive, more dense. Funny things happen with the time that is within the framework of those bodies. So, for instance, if you could get a spaceship going close to the speed of light, then the person inside the spaceship, if it were man, the person inside the spaceship who had a watch could be looking at the watch and saying, well, it's been 2 hours since we blasted off. This is a very powerful energy source that's pushing the spaceship. It's been 2 hours since we blasted off. When actually, if the spaceship now turned around and came back to Earth, they might find that 3 hours had gone by on Earth. What happens is that as you approach the speed of light, time slows down. Carl Sagan suggested on a program that if we could install a neutron device in a large spacecraft, now he says we're a long way away from that technology, but theoretically it's possible. If we could install a neutron device, not one that would explode, but one that releases energy, lots of energy, on a uniform basis, and if we could get that spacecraft going near the speed of light, he said, we could actually go around part of the galaxy and come back to Earth in about 8 years and find that maybe 30,000 years have gone by when we reach Earth again. Now, of course, you wouldn't know any of your friends. Now that's hard to grasp, that idea. Now nothing changes inside the spacecraft except that all the time devices, including biological rhythms, slow down, slow down, slow down, almost to a crawl. But the person inside the spacecraft would not realize it. From that framework, from that point of view, that frame of view, nothing would seem different until the person got back to Earth and then discovered all that time had elapsed on Earth, but because that person was going so rapidly, time actually slowed down inside the spacecraft. Very strange conception. There are a lot of esoteric conceptions today with time, space, velocity, the whole thing, all that combination. If there is a universal time, and many astrophysicists work on the basis that there is at least a theoretical universal time, and they use it as a point of reference. Then the question has to be asked, is there a different time for God than there is for us? I mean, if there is any time. Now, if someone says, there isn't any time because God is spirit, and time, the way we conceive of it and the way we've been talking about it, is a physics concept. If we talk about physics time, we're talking about measured duration. Measured duration. But if you can't talk about duration, at least initially, in relation to God, you can't put God and stretch him up against the grid of physics time and make him conform to that. Is there sequence, the other concept, in God? And I suggested this experiment in which we would, on page 188, imagine ourselves in a total sensory deprivation state, and then ask whether time would have any meaning for us. And I suggested that it would still have meaning, not in terms of duration, because you'd lose all sense of duration, but in sense of sequence. In the sense of sequence. Sequence of what? Sequence of self-experience. Sequence of thoughts or feelings. So that one thought came after another thought. Even with your eyes closed, you could think one thought after another. That would be sequence. That's the most basic conception of time. Sequence in self-experience. See, that has nothing to do with physics. It has nothing to do with measured duration. It has only to do with one thing coming before another and another thing coming after the one. Sequence. And so I ask the question, is there time with God in the sense of sequence? And when I ask sequence, I mean not simply things that are happening outside of himself. That's only secondary. But within himself. Self-experience. Is there time in that sense? And when I mentioned then these two scriptural events, creation, original creation, and the incarnation, as tests of the concept of sequence in God's self-experience, we discover that there is indeed time with God in the sense that there is a before he created and there is an after he created in original creation. And now we can sort out different definitions of creation. Ex nihilo, immediate. We're talking about original creation. The original bringing into being of that which we have today. And the other is the incarnation, which is very dramatic, because very clearly in the self-experience of the second person of the Trinity, you have a moment before he became incarnate. You have to use the word before. Or you could say it this way, if you don't like the word before, although I think you have to use it, there was a point in his self-experience when he was not incarnate. And then there was a point in his self-experience in which he was incarnate. And the incarnation follows, and here you have to use before and after, follows the point at which he was not incarnate. There is a real becoming here, not in the sense of process theology, but in the sense of John 1:14. And the Word. A becoming of what he was not before. He was not always incarnate. The Word became flesh. Scripture witnesses to this again and again. He took flesh. He took human nature. He was made of the seed of David. They all point very clearly to the fact that there was a becoming in his self-experience. And this is not just in interaction with the universe, because then you can say, well, that's because there's a created universe and there's a before and after in interaction with creation, which has physics time woven into it. And thus there's before and after. But this is in his self-experience. This is not just something outside of himself. This is in himself. I suggest those two great events, original creation and the incarnation, test for us the concept whether or not there is time with God in the sense of sequence. Now, it's a totally different question as far as duration. That's a different question. But sequence, I think we can affirm. And I've suggested on page 189, near the top, this definition of time in its most basic sense. A unidirectional, that's why you have an arrow going one way. The physicists call it the arrow of time. A unidirectional continuum of experience, emphasize and underline experience, including before and after relationships in sequential order. That's what I mean by time in its most basic sense. Scott. I would like to think so, except for the fact that they frequently rule out sequence as well. And also, they say things like, there is no past, there is no future, everything is now. And then they attach it to God's knowledge, and then we get into a whole area. The reason why God is omniscient, they say, is because everything is now. And therefore, there isn't any foreknowledge, there's only knowledge. It has all sorts of implications, by the way. It spills over into so many other doctrines. It's amazing, this whole conception of time. And I suggested, after looking at some scriptures that speak of God and time, and the question about Revelation chapter 10 and verse 6, where in the authorized version the angel swears that there will be time no longer, and the suggestion that a much better translation is there will be delay no longer, then I suggested on page 193 the concept of eternity, extending now the definition of time in its most basic sense as an infinite, unbounded, unidirectional continuum of experience, including before and after relationships in sequential order. All that adds is infinite and unbounded. That's all. Same definition otherwise. But it makes a world of difference. And I suggested that God alone is eternal. God alone is eternal. Had no beginning, no ending. Human beings have a beginning, so technically they can't be called eternal. You can say unending, that's true. See, when we say eternal life, we always have reference to the future. When we say everlasting, that usually, that is by denotation, refers to the future. But the word eternal can go either way. And we usually include parenthesis future in our usage of eternal. So unending is really quite precise and points to the future. End toward the future. Eternal can go both ways. And I would therefore suggest that human beings are not eternal, but they are unending. Or if you wish, everlasting. That's okay. Or if you want to use eternal and connect it with eternal life, you understand that that's looking to the future. That must always be in parenthesis in our minds when we use that. So then I suggested this simple diagram. Infinity, that sign for infinity, and then minus 3, minus 2, minus 1, 0, t equals 0, time equals 0. That's this moment right now, t equals 0. Whoops, that was a moment ago. Time keeps marching on. And then I would suggest man's infinity as regards future time as simply 0, plus 1, plus 2, plus 3, out again to infinity. Oh, Jeff.
I have two questions.
Only two? Wow.
Many have done the implication of all
of this. Okay.
First thing is about God's nature concerning time and eternity. Because the definition of God we studied yesterday, God is spirit, eternal, and infinite.
Infinite, eternal, and unchangeable.
Okay. The eternal part. Now, is that eternal, is talking about nature, or is it talking about time frame, or the time over the basic meaning we just covered?
It's using eternal, I think, in this sense.
Right. If that's the case, is that time then, the person already part of God, is just like a holiness?
Time is an attribute of God, yes.
Yes. Okay. So he's not a, he didn't create time, but rather it is part of God. It's
an attribute of God.
Okay. Second question.
But I qualify that by saying that physics time came into existence with the creation of the universe.
Okay, I agree.
Okay.
So when you say God is in time, you're talking about when God came to be.
What? Andy, would you turn that off, please? Thank you. Sequential time, that is sequence in self-experience.
Now, the second question I have is that something more mathematical.
Yes, good. I like mathematics.
I covered this negative into positive infinity in college, and I was a math major.
Oh, wow, okay, good. Let's talk.
We all take a break for you guys.
There was no such thing as what?
There is no negative 3 to a negative plus 3. Because saying that equal to 0 to 1, we cannot really define it because it is composed of the infinite numbers of rational and irrational numbers. And since it is number that is infinity, therefore you cannot really define 0 to 1. this only thing we have is the infinity, where we got something there, where we don't know where we are. That was basically.
Is this one of the questions on the final?
I hope not. I hope not.
So what he's saying is that 0 to 1, we cannot really define it. Numerically, yes. But not in the nature of a number one.
No problem there.
And because of
numerically, that's what we're talking about. We are talking numerically here. I agree. And they're absolutely right. If you're talking about being in the context of infinity, then you can't define. Because how would you locate the locus, the point at which you are, if an infinity comes prior to you and comes after you? How do you locate it? So how do you define it? But numerically, we can talk about it. Just as a illustration of moving toward the future and moving toward the past. Now, Thomas Gold, when he gave a paper one time at Cornell on the arrow of time, Herman Eckelman, who used to be one of our board members and is a close friend of Dr. Newman and some of the rest of us, he sat in that lecture on the arrow of time. And Gold is a very top person in his field. And Eckelman came out of the lecture saying, I'm not sure, he said, whether time's arrow goes forward or backwards, he says, according to this man's view, he says, but we sure used an hour of it. Well, the problem, of course, is a lot of people have tried to reverse time's arrow. And you could do that if you could go faster than the speed of light, theoretically. Nobody has even scratched the surface as far as success in that direction. Claims are always made, but then claims are made of perpetual motion machines all the time. And there doesn't seem to be any solid ground for making that kind of a claim now or in the future. The arrow of time is unidirectional. You had another question. In their self-experience. And that really doesn't have anything to do with mathematics. Again, we're not talking duration. We're talking about self-experience and personal interrelationships between the persons of the Trinity. I couldn't begin to try to express how that would relate to even to sequence yet, but to other conceptions of time, I wouldn't have the slightest idea of how to express that. I'm not sure anybody else does either, including all the philosophers who speak about time.
So it is God's time and our time. It's positively different.
Well, see, that's the next question. We haven't really answered that. We haven't answered that. In other words, I asked the question in the notes. If it's present now for us, is it future for God? That is, does God know the future because he's already experienced it? And see, that's the next question which we really haven't solved yet. I did suggest that B, C, and AD are as meaningful for God as they are for us. And that therefore, he didn't become incarnate before he became incarnate. And the end is not yet. If we don't adopt a Greek cyclical conception of time, but more of a linear conception of time with a consummation in history, then we have not experienced the end, but neither has God experienced the end. See, that's not saying anything about his knowledge. It's saying something about his self-experience. And those two must be kept distinct, knowledge and experience. Now, we'll explore that a little bit when we talk about God's knowledge, because that's a very big question today. And the whole thing of determinism and freedom, complete, total freedom, or a middle knowledge, or something like that. That's big in the journals today. Paul. Yeah.
On that, according to our definition of time, God is bound by time even now, that he has not felt experience is that coming.
Exactly. Precisely. Christ has not yet experienced his second coming.
Question. Before creation, time exists for God.
Yes, in that sense.
Before creation.
Before creation. All we're doing is subtracting physics time.
There was a time that exists before creation.
Sequence of self-experience. If God was dynamic and not static. If God was dynamic, that is, he thought, felt, and if there were any relationships between the three persons of the Trinity, then I think you'd have to say yes. There was time in that sense.
In eternity and future.
Yes. Yeah, that's okay.
Eternity and future. Will there still be maybe I don't know if you can. Will there be sequence
of things? Of course there will. Of course, even in the New Jerusalem, there will be sequence. And God will be with his people and dwell in their midst. There will be sequence. Remember, it says that the healing, that the leaves of the trees on either side of the river of life in the New Jerusalem are for the healing of the nations month by month. That's kind of interesting. Pardon?
The formal process of progress before creation, there was a physics time.
No, not before creation. Before there is a created universe, there can be no physics time. Because time, in the physics sense, is measured duration of physical change. So there can't be physics time. Yes? If they're in physical bodies, I fail to see how they won't experience some sense of physics time. And if the new heavens and the new earth have some of the same characteristics, even cleansed from sin and its effects, similar to the earth before the fall, and mankind before the fall, if you can think of it that way. Yes, further.
If God is bound, time.
Let's put it this way. If that's one of his attributes.
If it is his attribute, he's not subjected to it.
Pardon?
If that's his attribute, he's not subjected to it. Because I used to have the thought that God created us. To say that God is bound.
Sure, that's straight from Plato. It's amazing how much that has colored our thinking. Just amazing. It doesn't come out of Scripture. It comes out of Greek philosophy. And we can trace it. I mean, this is one of those ideas you can actually trace. And then you can trace it through. You can trace it through the early church fathers. And in the early Middle Ages. And in the time of the Reformation. And then all the way through the 17th, 18th, 19th century. You can trace it. It doesn't come from the Bible.
It's true because if the time is sequential, is that issue that I've met any problem with being the guys being seen, guys that's a big problem, bound to time.
See, I wouldn't use that expression, bound, unless you mean he's bound by his attributes. If you mean that, if you mean he's bound by justice because he is just, then I would just as soon say that justice is an attribute of God and that time in this sense is an attribute of God. As soon as you say, is he bound to time, for some people that's pejorative, that's prejudicial to say it that way. That makes him somehow under time, subject to time. Well, he's no more subject to time than he is to holiness. Subject to holiness. Why? Because holiness characterizes him through and through. Doesn't it? Yeah. It also clarifies a great many scriptures, by the way. See, once again, the value of a construct very often is in its explanatory power. Sometimes constructs like mathematical solutions are even elegant. You would know about that, OJ. Oisak, you had a point? Well, we'll ask OJ to explain it to you. Okay? In Korean language. He'll be able to explain it quite clearly, I'm sure. Yes, after class. Someone else, Paul. If God had a watch. That's good. If God had a watch, yeah. What time is it? See, the thing is this. If before the creation there is only God and no created thing, and I'm afraid we'll have to consign the watch to oblivion. The watch doesn't exist. There's nothing created by which to measure time, anything that moves physically.
Well, isn't that because there is nothing to measure time, time does not exist?
Ah, that's one of the questions we don't know. We don't know the answer to that. Just as we're working on the question of how God relates to physics time, the question of relationship. How does he relate to physics time? That's a difficult question. It's not easy.
When we say physics time did not exist before creation, we're really saying that because there was no way to measure physics time, or there was no way to measure time in a physics time sense, we cannot say that there was time.
Okay, that's fair. The latter. Yeah. There was no way to measure time. So whether it existed or not, we don't know. But it certainly did not exist in the ordinary definition of physics time. Yeah. Yes, okay, sure.
What then do we mean by time?
I think it means nothing. That's why I kept saying alleged timelessness. Alleged timelessness. That's the claim that's been made down through all these centuries, that God is timeless. I would like to shoot it out of a cannon myself. David.
But aren't you putting all this together? Aren't you saying that before the world was created, even though there was physics time, there was still time of God?
Yes.
Therefore, there were sequential.
Absolutely.
Before and after conversations.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's not that there was nothing there.
That's right.
To bring it.
Right. And as Paul suggests, there's nothing to measure duration as far as physics. There's nothing physical to measure duration. It's like the illustration of the thought experiment being on this planet with your eyes shut and nothing moving and nothing happening. There's no way to measure duration. People who are put into extreme sensory deprivation environments, they have no conception of how long they've been in there. or whether it's tomorrow or the next day or what it is. Yes.
But again, it's not that it doesn't time.
Exactly. Sure. That's right. That's right. That's right. Exactly. You start approaching, in that situation, you start approaching the most basic concept of time. Although, see, I had to make it extreme in my thought experiment, because in the laboratory over in New Jersey, you start hearing your heartbeat after a while. You start hearing it. It's really something. It's so soundproof, the chamber. You start hearing your heartbeat. And you could say, well, there's how many heartbeats, you know, and you could measure it. But I gave a thought experiment in which there was nothing moving, nothing going on physically, just to try to get at the most basic concept of time. Yes, Susan.
So we could say, like, God touches the time of God, but he strengthens as we're strengthened, because well, the Bible says that God the Father is the only one that knows when the second coming is, not the angels, nobody knows. So we know that when that time comes, he'll be experiencing it with us. Right?
The second coming, yes, yeah, of course.
So that's in the future for him.
That's in the future for God. He knows all about it now, but he hasn't experienced it yet. That's right.
But he's certain on the experience.
Certain.
On the experience.
Yeah, now the question is, how? See, that's another issue that we need to get into. We will get into. How can he be certain? See, that raises a lot of interesting questions. How can he be certain? We'll look at that one rather carefully. Has all sorts of implications. Yes, Bruce.
Regarding time travel,
yes.
You're saying about time and space affecting each other.
Right.
If that's true, then it might be totally impossible to ever really have time travel. How can we go forward into something that hasn't occurred yet? Or how could we go back into something that and something that is history have a real existence once it has occurred.
I remember here's another old film. I remember in an old film a scientist who had discovered that some sort of a meteorite or a comet or something had crashed in Africa. And he went there and got some of that material. And he was able to use that to set up a tremendously powerful telescope. And this telescope supposedly enabled him to get out to a certain point in space, far out in space, and then look back from that point at Earth and go back in time.
I didn't see the movie, but...
Yeah.
when I was in Bible college, one of the guys that I had to learn the Testament, he said that he thought that there might be historical video that we could actually look back at the Bible and see it.
That's right. The problem there is going faster than the speed of light. That's the problem. We'd have to go faster than the speed of light to get out there in order to see what was coming from Earth in the past. Because that light coming from Earth in the past, actually reflecting from the Earth, would then be traveling at the speed of light. We'd have to go faster than the speed of light and thus intercept it from the past time. And then we could see, we could look back, the suggestion was we could look back at the birth of Christ. Well, the only way you could do that is if you could go faster than the speed of light. That seems to be hopeless, quite frankly. David.
Corollary to that, there are people who theologically oppose
You might imply that from chapter 4, the first part, where God says, come up to heaven. But, yeah, but the problem is most of the stuff after the first three chapters is visions. And I'm not sure you can build a very strong case on visions in apocalyptic literature for transportation, out-of-body experiences, or anything of that sort. Now, with Paul being caught up, you might have a stronger case for that. I'm not sure you can build it strongly on John and what he says, because that seems to be mostly visionary. With Paul, he's caught up in the Spirit, and he's actually out of the body, as it were, and sees things that he's not allowed to tell anyway. I don't see any relationship between that and what Shirley MacLaine talks about it.
Do you see time travel as a possibility in the case of Paul?
I wouldn't even call it time travel. If one could be caught up in that fashion while his body remained on earth, then we wouldn't be talking about time travel. We'd be talking about something else that we don't understand, quite frankly, which isn't limited by the speed of light. So we're not really talking about time travel. OJ. Only one final one? Okay. That's dangerous to say that. Okay.
If Christ was became flesh,
I assume referring to either Revelation 13:8 or 17:8. And in Revelation 13:8, interestingly enough, you have to look at the structure in the Greek, and that helps a great deal, especially if you let yourself be influenced by the very parallel, similar structure in 17:8. Primary focus in those two scriptures is on having one's name written in the book of life and from the foundation of the world. Now, there's a problem there with from, because it's apo. And if you mean it was written at the beginning, that's one thing. If since the foundation of the world the name was written, that's a different thing. Okay? Now, there are people who fall on both sides of that issue, by the way. But aside from that, the reference seems to be in 13:8. Well, let's look at it for just a moment. Well, no, we better not look at it for just a moment. Well, let me just say, we're talking about the name not having been written, that is, those who worship the beast and his false, in his image. Their name has not been written from or since the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb slain. That puts a totally different cast on it. Instead of the Lamb being slain before the foundation of the world, we're really talking, and the parallel 17:8 helps you a great deal, because it's talking about the same thing, although it doesn't mention there the Lamb slain. But it talks about the name having been written from the foundation of the world. And whose book is it? It's the book of the Lamb slain. Now that helps a great deal. See, then it really implies nothing about that particular problem. Okay? it will stop. So.